Welcome back, everyone. I'm Tarek. I'm an addict.
Hey, sir.
All right, we're moving on to page 60. So at this point, the person you're taking through the steps has completed the second step. They've either become willing to believe or they've made a decision that God is everything, which in every case that's been successful, they say God is everything. And so now we move on. You know, Scott read the beginning of how it works. If you decided you want what we have, then you're willing to take certain steps. And now we're going to take a third step. But the third step, in my opinion, and then how I work it with men, has four components to it. The very first of which is the ABCs. There is no point in moving on with a sponsee if they cannot convince you based on their experience of what A, B, and C means to them. Is it true for them? And I am amazed how many times I've taken guys through the book this way or line by line, and I'll push the book away from me when I get this, and I'll sit back in my chair, and I'll put my leg up, and I say, all right, I want you to convince me of A, B, and C. And they can't do it. Not based on how they must be able to do it in order to take someone through the big book. They can't articulate the phenomenon of craving based on their experience. They can't articulate the inability to stay away from the first one, and then the internal condition. So to me, there's a disconnect, so I need to do some more work. We need to ask some more questions. Because remember, you're taking them through the process so they can be a sponsor. And these are basic concepts that must be understood based out of experience. Knowledge from experience, not just book knowledge. They must be able to tell stories to articulate this. So we talk about the ABCs. So once I'm convinced that they understand their experience around loss of control, power, and choice, there's a requirement for the third step. I feel like we just did a whole weekend on this last weekend. So being convinced, we're at step three. This is the first place in the book where they reference a step, which is that we decided, or second, actually, they did reference the first step in the program recovery. But we've decided here in this step that we're going to make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the God as we understand Him. Here's one of the most important questions. I referenced this earlier. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? And so, if the big book was just about the third step, it would be one page long. It would say, God gets you sober, keeps you sober, have a nice day. That would be it. We would have wings and halos and fly out of here. And the reality of it, the third step, it's really not about... It's about a decision, but it's also not about a decision. It's about a course of action that makes the decision happen. The course of action in steps 4 through 9 contradicts the way I've lived my life up to this point. And at my core, and I believe at the core of everyone sitting in this room, these steps are not something you're just in love with doing all the time. But those of us who understand the connection to the first step get why we have to do this. And so... the first requirement before you take this third step is you must be convinced that any life run on self-will, and how I define self-will is my ideas and belief system on how the world should work and the people in it. That's my self-will. A lot of people say self-will, you know, your life is your actions and your will is your thinking. And that worked for me temporarily early in recovery. It doesn't work for me anymore. I'm looking more at ideas and beliefs and self-defeating principles that I apply to the world and the people in it. And so then I work with concepts. Here are the questions. We talk about collision with something or somebody. What does that look like in your life? When you're full steam ahead, how do the interactions with God's kids look for you? The next question I want to ask is, let's talk about living by self-propulsion. And then I bring up this word driven, which we'll get to in a second. But that's another form of self-propulsion. There's no consideration in your life. No consideration. There's just go. The next question is the actor who wants to run the whole show. How are you trying to control and enjoy your life? Now, how does that look for you? Is it working for you? So then we go further into the actor piece, and we talk about the show doesn't come off. Well, what happens when things don't go your way? What's your next attempt? Do you try to exert yourself even more? Do you try to manipulate people to buy your side so you can prove your argument? Do you consistently always have an axe to grind with people? Are you consistently punishing people by withholding love? Do you like to prove how you're right by making someone else feel wrong? These are all aspects of trying to be the actor, the producer, the actor, the light guy, the sound guy, all at the same time. And then we get to the basic trouble. are we not really self-seekers even when we're trying to be kind? We have the stage character. I call him the accountant, right? He's taking score all the time. He's tallying the books, right? There's, you know, I live by a principle that Scott taught me called the law of circulation. You know, things are given to you and people do things for you. Doesn't necessarily you have to turn around and repay that, but you pass it on. People say pay it forward, but there's a law of circulation that exists in the universe. Are you the victim of the delusion that you can violently pull out of life satisfaction and happiness if you only manage well? And, the, you know, one of our favorite questions is, how's that working for you? That's a basic question to get to the root of the problem. Are you not even in your best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I used to love telling people I didn't like drama, but whenever drama took place, I was right in the middle of it. Right? And so I've noticed that really after the first year and a half of my recovery, when I really was introduced to this concept of self, the drama went away. I rarely ever get involved in drama or find myself in the middle of it. And so Scott, I heard Scott say this years ago, and then I got it. You know, Scott said in his first period of time, nothing changed about his character except for his willingness to do whatever he had to recover from his addiction. And I went through the same thing. My character was not refined in any way, shape, or form in my first 15 to 18 months because the only thing that was different is I wasn't smoking crack or drinking. I was still acting out in the same methods that I had done in my entire active addiction and all the time leading up to my crossing of the invisible line. And so there's a surrender to drugs and alcohol, but there's a separate surrender to self, and we can't do that at all. And now that I've mentioned this word surrender, those of you who know me know this concept I work with. You can look at the first step, and you can examine it by asking questions, but there's a piece of the first step, which is surrender, that you can't work. It's either there or it's not, and that's what you have to pray for, that the surrender is there. I think of the surrender as I get a period. People call it grace. I call it the liar is dormant, and I'm open to suggestions and following directions, and I've been reduced to nothing. Therefore, I know my ideas no longer work. My answers are not going to be able to have any practical application here. And then I submit to a way of life other than my own through following the directions of a sponsor. Okay, so that is surrender for me, and it happened for me in the Duval County Jail because of an experience I had that forced me into my first three steps without even knowing I was working the first three steps. I hear people say I worked my first step before I got here. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something worked me before I got here. It surrendered me. If I had the capacity to bring about surrender, I would have done it long before November 5th, 2007. Back to page 62. So step three, section A, convinced of ABC. Step three, section B, you must be convinced that your life run on your ideas and belief systems is hardly a success. And then I go into the root of the problem. You know, the authors of the big book they're geniuses, because if page one of the big book said selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of your troubles, none of us would have read any further. We had to talk about what we delusionally believe is the problem, drugs and alcohol. But by this point, they're open. You know, by this point, they've seen some value in what we're doing, and they're willing to follow directions. And we start talking about what the real problem is, which is selfishness and self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, etc. We made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And then I tell them the greatest statement of hope in our big books is coming up. My troubles are all of my own making, every single one of them. As long as my trouble is of your making, I'm a victim, and I will not get free until you come take ownership of this problem that I think you've created. But if every problem in my life is my making, that means the solution is in me changing. That means you and the world do not have to change for me to be okay and to be free. That's the most freeing concept in the big book. And then they talk about this selfishness. I love people that, one, they can work on their character qualities. Two, they can remove their resentments. And three, they can remove their defects of character. If you believe you can do that, you do not need to be at a CA convention. You can just go back outside and remove your resentments, remove your character defects, and live happy, joyous, and free. And I'm not trying to be confrontational here, that sounds like a self-help program to me. And this program is for people who cannot help themselves. That's why we're all here. We need access to a power greater than ourselves that will solve our problem. But the difficulty here is most alcoholics and addicts have to be pretty badly mangled. I like that word, mangled, to commence to solve their problems. And so I do talk about this idea that only God makes that possible. It's one of the most important. Do you believe that with God's help, you can be entirely rid of self? So we get to step 3, section C, the decision. Let me get a show of hands. Who in here, when they think of the third step, just think of the prayer? The prayer on page 63. Nobody. That's amazing. Okay. So this is the how and the why of it. This is the answer to the question on the previous page. What do we mean and just what do we do? First of all, we quit playing God. Why? Because it doesn't work. Our experience shows us that. Hereafter in this drama of life. So this is the introduction. They're so amazing in how they wrote this book. So now we talk about stage characters. We talk about the drama of life. We talked about the actor. We talked about the light guy. There's something going on here to this. They're moving us into this realm. We're going to talk a little bit about it called Theater of the Lie Inventory. But this is where this all comes from. And so when I'm taking a guy through the steps, he has to define. He gets a dictionary and he defines the words employer, employee, father, child, principal, agent, director, actor. And what I have them do is they write a prayer of this contract they're entering into with their creator. Certain roles are the sponsees or mine, and certain roles are God's. God, you're going to be my director, and this is what I'm going to do as an actor. You're going to be my father. I'm going to be the child. This is my role. As your employee, this is my role. As your agent, this is my role. And so when they come to me to affirm the third step decision. So we have being convinced of A, B, and C. We have that our life run our self-will is hardly a success. We have the decision, which is the roles, in order to enter into this contract, because in order for the contract to be solidified, we must keep close and perform God's work well. Those are the conditions in terms of the contract. And then I make an affirmation of all of this with the third step prayer, which is that seals the deal. You have just said to God, my life's no longer my business. Because when you offer yourself to God to do with you and build with you as He will, that's what that means. And doesn't mean good stuff's always going to happen. And so we affirm the third step decision. And this is done in however you'll be moved to do it in certain ways with certain sponsees. Sometimes I hold hands with the guys. Sometimes we burn candles. Sometimes we burn sage. Sometimes we do it at the church. Sometimes we do it. We did one at the monastery. It just depends on where you are with each specific individual. Your intuition will guide you there. And quickly we launch into a course of vigorous action called inventory. At this point, I do read the book line by line. You have to, because resentment's very important. The way they describe it in the big book, the personal house cleaning, a business that takes no regular inventory always goes broke. But I do want to point out that those of you who believe that the big book only talks about a two-part problem, on page 64, it talks about a three-part problem. It says, from resentment stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we strain out mentally and physically. Therefore, the big book just laid out a three-part problem. I know a lot of people say, well, you know, the 99% of the human race walks around with a spiritual malady, conscious separation from God, a broken internal condition that they can't remedy on their own, and then they have an internal condition that manifests in an obsession to have sex with anything that moves, to shop incessantly, to eat food, to physically abuse people, to emotionally abuse people. That's the manifestation of their internal condition into that obsession. Regardless or not, alcoholism has a factor to it that's called the broken internal condition. That's part of it. That's why the further away we get from a drink or a drug, which was our solution, if we don't have a new solution, a new answer that's more effective than that one, that's why we don't stay. That's the root of the problem. So it must be part of the overall problem, which is addiction and alcoholism. Addiction does not just have to do with drugs. My first addiction was approval. it was not a substance. That was my first addiction, was approval. I had an addiction to my identity attached to sports and you know, academics. That was a big deal to me. It treated the internal condition. And so expand the definition of addiction. Inventory, there's three parts to inventory. And if you want a copy, you can put your email address out up here and I'll send you what we're going to use. We're not going to go through it. We're not going to do an example. We call it Theater of the Lie inventory. And in a simple way, it's resentment inventory, people. And I'm going to describe my way, and then maybe Scott will elaborate on his a little bit. But this is what I've been doing recently over the past couple of years. I give them resentments on people and institutions only, and they write the four columns. Column one, who is it? Column two, why am I angry? Why do I feel slighted? Have you broken a commitment to me? So forth and so on. Column three is self-esteem. How do I feel or see myself in this one act in this drama of life? What stage characters come into the game? Okay. Pride. How do I want others to see me in this one act in this drama of life? Ambition is what I want externally. It's an end result. Security is what do I need internally to breathe and be okay. Personal relationships are my deep-seated beliefs about how this relationship should look. Sex relations. If I'm writing about a man, it's a belief system about that gender in this situation, how they should show up. If I'm writing about a woman, it's about how I believe a female should show up. Pocketbook is time and money. In the fourth column, I start with fear. Fear rolls into the dishonesty or the delusion that I'm under. That rolls into a selfish attitude that I have, and my selfish attitude always forces me, compels me to engage in some self-seeking action. That's how I do resentment inventory. When they're done with that, we fist step it. I do a fist step just on that. I'm going to explain to you why I do it this way. As I'm listening to that portion of the fifth step, in the third column is the tragedy of the ego. They have self-defeating principles and aspects of character that are operating. I make a list as I listen to the fifth step. Then I say, go back and write three columns. I don't ask for the fourth column on the principle inventory. I just want to see how it affects their state of consciousness. They go write inventory the same way, except in column two, I ask them, where'd you get this idea and is it working for you? Okay, that's resentment inventory. As I've listened to this fifth step, there's fears have come up. I've made a list of all their fears. So then I ask them to go write I use four column inventory. What's the fear? Why do you have the fear? How did you set the ball rolling? And what perhaps is a better way? That's the four column inventory that I've been using. And then in the sex inventory, it's just the misconduct in relationships. I don't call it a sex inventory anymore. I want to know how you're conducting yourself in relationships. Because the spiritual path at the end of the day, I don't know if we'll get to this today, is about relationships with God's kids. Well, that's the long and the short of it. That's the inventory process. And from there, we move into the fifth step. And I'm going to... I'm gonna cut my piece off. I want Scott to do the fifth step. I just covered the entire inventory. A couple of things on inventory. And so I say, go write maybe 3 to 5 of these inventories and time how long it takes. And I know the first few ones are gonna be longer. But let's say the guy writes 5 pieces of inventory, all 4 columns, and it takes him 30 minutes. And he's got 30 resentments. So I know that's going to take him 180 minutes to write that inventory. So that's 6 hours. I say pick the deadline. If they don't meet that deadline, barring any weird circumstances where I have to give them an extension, I'm either going to tell them to find another sponsor or we're going to have a serious conversation. Because one thing as a sponsor, you have to set the pace. You're the sponsor. I have enough friends. I don't need any more friends. I'm not here to kick it with you.
That's right.
Right? I'm here to show you how to develop a personal relationship with God. And through that process, we may become friends. But if your actions are telling me you don't care about this inventory, you don't find it urgent and important, I'm not going to care. If your actions tell me you do care, I'm going to care. And these are important rules to follow. I know when you're early in sponsorship, you just want people to ask you to be a sponsor and you want to take them through the steps. As you get the gifts of recovery, you have to have a way to weed people out. You have to. You've got families, you've got kids, you've got responsibilities, you've got home group obligations. You can't sponsor everybody. You've got to figure out a way. No, not everybody that comes to me and says they want help, it's not my job to help them all. It's just not. And so you have to set the pace specifically in inventory. And there's a reason we lose a lot of people in inventory. You know, I think they take too long. It's not, and you don't have to use the method that I'm describing here. What's important is people write inventory. We're not losing people because they're not writing theater of the lie inventory. We're losing people because they ain't writing inventory. But as a sponsor, you have an obligation to hold them accountable. And so when they get to make their own deadline and they don't meet it, that says a lot to me. I can't tell you that I fired every single guy that came to me that didn't meet the deadline, but I have been known to fire people. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Scott. He's going to move us into the fifth step.
Thanks, Steve. Hey, everybody. I'm Scott. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. Hey. We're a great job. Carrick just thought I heard a couple things Carrick's doing I didn't know he was doing. I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds really good, man. I like that. I'm excited about that. Thank you, T. All right, so, you know, a guy, my experience of getting a guy to the fourth step and he's actually willing to write inventory and dig in, he's not even thinking about the fifth step anymore at this point, right? Like, he's so focused on the task at hand and he goes after it. So when he comes out, And I love what I hold guys to task too. I help them schedule something. I don't let it stay out there long, right? And we develop an agreed upon timeline. You know, my first sponsor said to me, he said, "You have 2 weeks to be done with inventory, and if you're 14 days." And he said, "If you're not done, we're going to do whatever you've done, but it's in your best interest to be complete because what you're not done with, we won't do, right?" And that had an impact on me. And I will tell my guys to be done, right, by said date. And barring any, you know, any crazy circumstances like Tarek mentioned, I will give leniency, of course, for those things, and we'll work something else out because life can happen. Other than that, I bring them back to the directions. You know, next we launch on a course of vigorous action, right, a strenuous effort to be faced and be rid of. So there's some very powerful language there that tells you the energy at which we're supposed to approach that step. So get them through that. I schedule a fifth step with them as quickly as I can, that it will work with both of our schedules as soon as they're done, right? We've scheduled that on the front end also, but if something changes, we'll reschedule. But I try to get it as close as I can, and we're going to talk about what the big book says. So when a guy comes to me, and he's done, he's got his fourth step ready, he's done with, and I'll make sure all of it's done. Is resentment done? Is fear done? Is your conduct done? And has your sane, sound ideal been written, right? And I'll make sure all of it's been completed. Do we need to touch on that at all?
Touch on that.
Okay, let me back up just a touch. So who in here, and y'all, please, there's no judgment, there's only love, and I want you to be honest with me. Who's never written a sane, sound ideal like the big book says to do? Is there anybody here who has not? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so I got four people. Thank you for your honesty. I appreciate it. I was here for, well, I was my third piece of step work, and I was in my third year of sobriety before I was actually told how to write a conduct inventory specifically and to use the big book to do it. It was about resentment and fear, and it's like that part was just skipped over. So we've got some forms, and please, if you want the Theater of the Lie stuff, and make sure you get our contact information. We will help you understand how to write this kind of inventory for yourself and how you can help teach others to do it, okay? And we'll give you all of the forms and everything. They're all from the big book, trust me. We'll just teach you how to do it. But the sexual inventory or the conduct inventory is so important because it really pulls out the way I behave in relationship. And I love that Tarek mentioned relationship happens on the spiritual path. I take it even to say that the whole thing is relationship. I can go live in a hut in the woods and be a hermit and pray and meditate all day and never have a resentment at anybody. Right? But as soon as I walk out of the hut and out of the woods and I run into you, I'm mad at you about something, right? So life happens in relationship, and I learn how to live and see God in my fellows, right? And I have to do that through this process. So this the relationship or the conduct inventory is extremely important, because once I get sober, and I've been sober for a minute, we start to look at this thing and we really look at how we behave in relation to others. And for most of us, it's kind of gross, right, what we see. It's not an easy pill to swallow when we see the way we treat people, loved ones, intimate relationships, coworkers, our own relationship with the divine. We're not very nice to any of these things, right? So the sane, sound ideal is in the book. It's on page 69. And paragraph 2 says, in this way, after we've answered all the questions, which is part of how we write the inventory, and it's very clear how we do a conduct or a sexual relationship inventory is very detailed in the big book. It's just interesting to me how many people don't actually do it, or their sponsors don't show them how to do it. Reason is their sponsors haven't done it, right? This happens. So our job is to help you understand that it can be done, and we'll show you how to do it if that's what you want to do. So after we've answered the questions, we've written our inventory, we're going to look at how we're going to create a new sane, sound ideal. So it says, in this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life, or our future relationship life. You know, there's an important question back in the paragraph before. It says, where were we at fault? That's not the question. What should we have done instead, right? That's the question we use to begin to craft a new ideal. Because every time we inventory a relationship, we'll see where we were selfish, self-centered, where we aroused jealousy, suspicion, bitterness. We'll see all of the ugliness, right? Then we'll have that question, what should we have done instead? The answer is never not gotten involved in the first place, right? The real way we answer that question is, how could I have been of service? What could I have done differently that would have been in alignment with maybe my moral values, right? Whatever it is that's important to me. We answer that question honestly. It's not an easy one to answer, but we answer it. Okay, that's going to help us shape the future relationship life. The answer to that question, that's why it's so important. And it says here, in this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life, relationship life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? And I'll tell the guy, here's a prayer. Every time I'm with a guy in the big book and there's a prayer, I say, there's a prayer. Highlight it, underline it. Every time we come to a prayer, here's one. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. So I'll tell him, when you're going to write the same sound ideal, ask God to help you mold it and ask God to help you live up to it. Remember always that your sex powers are God-given, therefore good. Remember, God is everything. Second step proposition. Neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor be despised and loathed.
Can I say something?
You may. Go ahead.
One thing I fell victim to was the first few times I wrote wrote the conduct inventory, and I wrote out my sane and sound ideal, and then I tucked it away in a drawer or in my bag, and I never referred to it.
That's right.
And now I've been doing something with my wife. We've probably been doing this close to the last 2.5 years, maybe 3, is I get out, and I just did this a couple weeks ago. I read her my sane and sound ideal, and I just found out I ain't doing too hot. All right?
That's right.
I'm way, way off the beam when it comes to this stuff. And I needed to check in with her. She gave me my report card, and it really sucked. How else do you grow an understanding of effectiveness unless you use this ideal you've just crafted? You must use it, or you're just wasting time by doing the exercise. That's it.
Thank you, T. So what it says, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to go toward it. Now, I'm real clear with my guys. Anybody, I'm not the judge of your sexual conduct. I'll even throw a couple of my own stories out there so that if I got a sense around a guy, around his stuff, I'll throw something to kind of help him level it up, right? So he knows, because I've done some stuff, right, over the years. So I want him to know it's okay. I'm not the judge of whatever he's done, I mean, at all. And I to go back to this point, I'm not the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct, right? Only God is. So here, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. That's very important. I illustrate that. We must be willing. We must be willing to make amends when we've done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. And in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. And then here's another prayer. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come. Here's the big if we want it. See, Tarek was just talking about a time when he didn't want it. I got no experience with that whatsoever. I'm totally lying right now. Yeah, I totally threw him in the drawer too, so I get it, right? Like, it's like we forget that part. We go, oh, I wrote this ideal. I'm so happy. It's like my shiny ideal. Then I'm going to go over here and keep doing the same stuff I was doing. So I have to want it, right? It's a weird thing. Sex is weird for us. You know, consuming alcohol and and cocaine and the stuff we do is not a part of our hierarchy of needs, right? Sex is a part of your hierarchy of needs. It's a human need, right? So we get weird around it. We will try to manage it, control it, manipulate it, and it's bizarre behavior. So all that's fine. It's all good. The book's going to tell us if we continue to harm others, then we're probably going to drink and get high behind it, right? So we have to be willing to grow towards the new ideal. We ask God to help us grow towards it. Have a little bit of, we make sure we stay accountable to some people around us, because all of us have our stuff with sex, whatever it may be, and some of us act pretty goofy with it while sober, right? And it takes a while to start getting that stuff in alignment. That's okay, right? We must be willing to grow towards the ideal. And here's the thing. I don't ever tell like new guy, don't have a relationship for the first year. I don't tell that because that's not in the book, right? I take him right here and I say, let's create a new ideal out of your inventory and then go do whatever you want to do, man, right? I mean, you got to go out, you got to go play the game. You got to go have some experience with it. You're not going to learn how to be in a relationship unless you're in relationship. And then you're going to go light a couple of them on fire. And then we're going to write some more inventory. And then you're going to create a new ideal. And they're going to get better and better and better. I promise you, because that's my experience, right? Okay, good. So now we're going to move over to, we're going to go back to the fifth step. Thank you for, back to 72. Thank you for taking some time with me on that. All right. Okay, so when I get here to this part with a guy, he's got his inventory, everything's done, he sits down with me. I'll have him read all of this actually to me, right? I'll have him read this part out because I want to talk to him about this. So it says, having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. What's a new attitude? Changed thinking, right? Trying to think differently. Trying to get a new relationship with our Creator, our own conception of our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path, the things that are in the way, the things that cause the conscious separation. We're trying to discover those. All right. We've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now note, here's the promise. These are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, that being me, right? The sponsor, you, the sponsor, the exact nature of our defects. I'm clear here to tell him, look, I'll tell them before they start writing their inventory, you're going to have a lot of stuff that looks the same, right? You're going to be resentful at Jerry and Sue and Bob and Joe, and it's going to be a bunch of different things, but they're all going to look the same. Many of them, right? That's because it's the same defect that's showing up. It's the nature of the defect. So I'll kind of bring them back to that. And with this part, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the exact nature of the defects, right? Because that's what we're going to take forward into sixth and seventh step. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. Now, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. It's pretty funny, right? Yeah. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. And I'll always ask a guy, always, why would a solitary self-appraisal be insufficient for you? And then I listen because I love to hear the answers that come. Some of them are actually on point. Some of them are, I don't know where they come from. They're interesting. But it's, and you want to kind of have a conversation here about, even though you've swallowed some big chunks of truth about yourself, you've written a full inventory, you still see it through a subjective lens, right? You still see it through your own stuff, and there is going to be times that you just will not see the truth about this thing, even though you've written on it, right? And that's why another set of eyes, a new pair of glasses sitting over here with you that's completely objective and unattached to any results, the Spirit moves through that with less refraction, right? The Spirit moves through that and gives you some clear stuff, which is very good. So we really, really need that. Now, the book's going to tell us, many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We'll be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see the good reasons why we should do so. Best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking or using dope, right? So if we don't do this, we don't go share with another person, we're going to get high, right? It says the best reason first. It's the only reason they give in the book. So time after time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves certain facts about their lives. Who in here on their first inventory held something in and then called a sponsor a few hours later or the next day and told them the whole thing? Anybody here ever do that? Okay. See, it happens, right? Like, that's what I always do with somebody at the very end of a first fifth step, their first one. I go, is there any other things? I mean, is there any sex things? Is there any crime things? Is there anything at all that you've got stuck down there in a hole that you haven't told me, right? That you need to talk about. You need to put it out there. 80% of the time I get a no. And almost 100% of the time on the no, I get a call within the next 12 hours to tell me something, right? About the other 19% of the time, I get a, yeah, there's something I didn't tell you, now tell me right then. And then about 1%, which is very rare, somebody goes, no, I actually told it all to you, right? So there's, most of us hang on to something, right? Especially that first one. So just be looking for that in a brand new person, because we're so scared, right? Yeah.
One thing I do on the front end of fifth steps, especially with the new guys, and maybe a guy I'm taking through the steps that I don't know that well, I'll ask him a basic series of questions. Have you been involved in a homosexual activity? Have you been involved in a burglary? Have you been involved in rape or abortion? Have you been involved in murder? There's one more. It's the darkest things you can imagine. Bestiality. That's the other one. And so I ask all those questions, and I sit and I look. Because once those questions are answered, I mean, that's it right there. You've gotten all the rough stuff out of the way, and you can really go to the task at hand. And then there's and you may, are you going to get into like what lists you keep while you listen to a fifth step?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I am.
Okay. So that's all I got.
Okay. And you may have something else. But so once a guy starts, thank you, Terry. So once a guy goes into, so once we go into the mechanics of the fifth step, right? Once we sit down and we start going through the process, we get two sheets of paper out. Right. One is a harms list, right? The other is an aspect of character and a defect of character list, right? So aspects of character are defined like this: self-defeating belief systems, self-defeating principles. Like Tarek talked a minute ago about going back after that point and doing a three-column inventory on principles. That's what he's talking about, right? He's talking about the self-defeating belief systems that we as sponsors will be able to identify when the guy's going through his inventory, right? Because they'll show up. So at the end of it, I've got an aspect of character list and a defect of character list. That all goes on the same page, right? Usually the seven deadly sins show up as defects, right? You know, gluttony, lust, sloth, anger, all that stuff. Like, those things I'll keep an eye out for when I'm listening closely to these people. And then, of course, aspects of character I'm looking really closely for and I'm listening for, because they're so powerful and they continue to run our lives. Right? They continue to show up in everything we do. And if we don't uncover them, what we do not uncover, we cannot take to God in 6 and 7. Right? It stays hidden. It stays behind the curtain. So, remember, the fourth step tells us nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty. And I'm also writing a harms list, right? And that's every time I hear a harm that's a direct harm, it gets written down. You know, mom, this, dad, whatever, right? We go through the whole thing. And then at the end of that, there's a complete list of defects and aspects of character and a complete list of harms, or pretty complete, after we've gone through the inventory. Now, if I'm listening to a monster inventory, I'll be truthful with you. Well, we're talking about a new guy, right? So I'm not going to, if a new guy says to me, I've got 250 resentments, right? And he's a guy we need to get through to work really fast, I'm going to go, give me your big 20, right? I'm going to give me the low-hanging fruit, the ones that are eating your lunch right now. Write resentment inventory on those that are just eating your ass up. Let's get some freedom from that. Then we'll come back in another piece of work and get all those other ones, right? So it's important that I said that, because we'll spend way too long on that thing. If we tell a guy to go, like Terry was talking about, you tell a guy to go do 250 resentments and he's a new guy, theater of the lie, he's going to be drunk or something, right? It's just too much work. He can't handle it. So harms list, aspect of character, defect of character list. We do all that when we're going through this. Now, once we're complete, and I've made sure that he's got nothing else left to tell me and everything's off out on the table, I'll hand him his two lists, right? And I'll give them back to him. Then I send him home for an hour. So we turn over to 75. The bottom of 75, paragraph 3. The book says this. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. This doesn't have to be a quiet place. It can be a place you can be quiet, right? There may be noise in the environment. It doesn't have to. Some guys think, oh my God, there's noise. Can't do it. You have to be quiet, right? You have to find a place you can be quiet. Right? You can make that look like whatever it is for you to be quiet. Just go in the bedroom for an hour or wherever. Go out in the woods. I don't care, man. Find a place where you can be quiet for an hour. Taking the book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. That's page 59. So, I actually like the mechanics of putting the book on the shelf and taking it down just because it's a clear-cut direction and I get all weird and geek out about that. So I say, put the book on the shelf and take it down, right? If you go in the woods, you may not have a shelf, so you do your best. Sit it on the tree branch and take it down, right? So anyways, if there's a shelf to put the book on, put it on the shelf and take it down. Right? I think it's good. There's an anchoring effect to it. It's valuable. All right. Turn to page 59. Carefully reading the first five proposals, ask if you've omitted anything. Right? I have the guy go back, and I want you to look at the first five proposals, and I want you to consider each one. Right? Do you believe you're powerless over cocaine? Right? Do you have an allergy of the mind, obsession of the body? Are you clear on that? Is there any doubt, anything missing, anything you missed or omitted with me? Right? You can follow suit with what I'm saying, but I have them question every step, really look at it, contemplate it, spend some time with it. Set the timer for at least 1 hour, minimum of an hour you will be in there. Right? Look at the first five proposals. Has anything been left out? I also have them go back through the inventory. I have them go back through and look through every one. Just kind of scan it, read through your whole inventory again. Does anything jump out at you? Is there anything you missed? Is there any harms we didn't get on the list? Right? Do you see anything that stands out? Almost invariably, everybody I work with finds something when they go back through their inventory. Something jumps out to them, right? They'll mark it down. And then they talk to me about that and we circle back for a review. All right. These are important questions here at the end. Are you building an arch that you will walk through a free man at last? Is your work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? That's the steps. Is the first five proposals solidly in place? Have you skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have you tried to make mortar without sand? Right? Have you been dishonest? Have you admitted things? Have you half-assed this thing? Right? There's something missing. Really get them to dig in this hour. Spend time with it. And here's what will happen if all of this stuff is clear. We back up to this fifth step promises, the paragraph before, paragraph 2. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, and we feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Right? So after I've done the fifth step with the guy, I talk to him about the promises, and then I send him home to do his hour. Right? And then after his hour is complete, he has a direction to call me and to go over anything that came up, anything that was missing, any more harms he had to the list, anything else that came up that we did not cover. And then he'll call me, and we'll review that together. Okay. You want to take a break now and then come back and get the rest?
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting close on time.
Let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break.
Okay.
10-minute break, and then we'll come back and do the last session on 6.